The thing is, when we're trying to understand brains, it's your brain trying to understand.
Whoa.
Whoa.
I feel like I just came out.
Echo.
I'm in the void.
Whoa.
Are you in the void?
Yes.
Welcome to the void.
We're all taking LSD.
Wow. Okay, that was weird. Oh, are we back?
Are we back?
I don't know, are we?
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
I think of my life as like the start of time. So yeah. Like the 80s is before time in my life.
A bit self-centered, isn't it?
Shut up, you know what exactly what
the
I'm
land
talking
before
about.
Time.
nothing was important till I existed.
To me, yes, that is true.
Is your skeleton inside of you, or are you inside of it?
I'm inside everything that I call me. I'm on the center of it all. Sure.
Right, okay. Yeah. Get over yourself, mate.
No.
You look through your skeleton.
Yes, I look through.
I'm Luke Cutforth, and I'm the center of the universe.
No, that's not what I said.
No, he said he's Luke Cutforth, and he's the center of Luke Cutforth.
Although, on that topic of me being the center of the universe.
Here we go.
We are I am the center of my universe.
You're the center of
your universe.
Yeah, the observable universe.
Yes. So, I am the center of the universe, to me.
Wow.
What a soundbite.
No, to me. Make sure you keep the to me in there.
I'm not editing.
I'm editing. It's stuck up to me.
Well, you're clearly faking it, or send them to a psychiatrist.
Sounds like my therapist.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You good?
Well.
Okay. Well.
Oh.
Apparently not.
My therapist
yeah.
says.
Right, I'm ignoring you two now. So.
That's what my therapist says. It's the first thing I do.
Who
text,
wouldn't?
Text my wife. All right, wifey.
Well, that's not true, Luke, because you said it was weird to text about a cold sore.
Right, okay. You know, when people, like, break up via text and that's weird, that's the same thing to, like, get a text about, I've got herpes.
No, like, hey, just be careful, I have herpes.
Okay.
Like,
I want to clip that, just that bit. You leaning forward into your mic and going, be careful, I have herpes. Oh, God, now there's one of me. Oh, damn it.
James,
you say it, go on.
No.
You know, all of us almost certainly have herpes.
In our, like...
What have you been doing?
Wait, what?
Well, I've had chicken pox. I assume both of you have.
Yes.
That's strain of herpes.
Is that herpes?
Yes. Have either of you had kissing disease?
Sorry, but you said...
Epstein-Barr virus.
You said almost all of us almost certainly have...
Oh, all of us.
Present tense herpes.
Yes, it'll still be in your system.
What?
You get away from me.
Either that or you're going to be immune to it.
So if I was to go around London every day and go, ugh, get away from me, you've got herpes, I would be correct in that.
Almost certainly.
Almost certainly correct.
You've got herpes. You got a cold sore the other day.
That was a pimple. But I did have chicken pox.
You've got herpes.
Yeah. There's like six.
I just love that out of context. You've got herpes.
You've got herpes.
Yeah.
You've got herpes. Yeah.
Everybody gets herpes. So if you, like, E. coli and stuff, you just take the first name and shorten it to a letter.
So, like, Eli. Eli.
No, E. coli is the shortened
one. Oh, okay. What's E? What does the E stand for?
Escherichia.
That was going to be my guess.
if I see it written down, there's too many C's and H's and S's. I don't know.
This is horrible.
It's awful, right?
It really is.
And you wouldn't be able to experience anything.
This is
it would
2 weeks
just be...
in a row that we've had dead animals as a theme.
I mean, it's science. What do you expect?
No, I guess.
Oh, God. Why are we part of the Psy Guys? Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But, like, seriously, if you're listening to this and you're watching, you're walking somewhere right now and you're listening to it, like, just really pay attention to the sensations. When you walk...
The ground moves.
The ground moves.
Like a treadmill.
Your point of view moves, but the actual, what you call you, stays still. And it's very weird when you notice it.
You've never left one point...
Yeah,
you've been single point in your entire life.
Yes, you've never left this point.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Things are just happening around you.
Yeah, well, you're just changing your point of view of the world. And I don't know how that works, but that feels so real. And maybe everyone's just going to think I'm mental.
I feel quite strong. I can move the universe.
All right, James.
How much you guys lift? I've been lifting, you know, the universe
lately. I told you, I lift two neutrons and two protons.
I lift the universe. Fight me.
Do you know how energy intensive it is to make for them to make web? Because obviously if it's so strong, it must take a lot of work.
As far as I'm aware, it's quite and they eat their own webs when they're done with them. So some of them.
Yes, I have seen that before. I've seen that happen in our garden. I've seen, like, if I mess up a web, the spider will be like, oh my God, right? And then, like, eats it up and we'll start again. And they're like, I feel so guilty because they're just like, they've made this beautiful thing. And then, but they're so, like, hardy and so stoic because they're just like, oh, my web's screwed. Right, make another one.
Imagine if someone kind of ruined your house a little bit. You had to eat it. And then shit it out of your arm.
Knocked your house over.
Shit out a brick and
stuff. Literal brick by brick. Building brick by brick, yeah.
Pulling bricks out
of place. Oh, that'd be awful. The most abundant thing on the surface of Earth is water, but we've not really been there, have we? This week we're talking about the real final frontier, deep sea exploration, and why you should be terrified of the ocean.
We've not been to water.
Not to the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, the bottom of the ocean.
Corey,
okay.
Can I just ask? This week on Twitter, I saw like this video where it just kept going lower and lower. Is that why you've chosen this? It was just like a video that was like, how deep is the ocean? And it just kept going down.
I was in the bath when I saw that and I was really scared.
How deep is my bath?
So if you're ever wondering why some of the Sci Guys topics get picked and like some really important scientific reason, it's probably not. Corey's probably seen a meme.
Maybe it's because Corey's in the bath.
It was really scary because my bath's not very deep, but the ocean is really deep.
Right.
So fishermen say that the deep sea is any part of the ocean beyond the continental shelf, which is just like the edge of the land. So as soon as it drops off, they're like, that's deep sea.
Yeah.
Whereas scientists, the deep sea is the lowest part of the ocean, which is about deeper than 1,800 meters, which is beyond where light can reach. So for scientists, deep sea is like 1,800 meters, and for fishermen, it's pretty shallow.
Technically, light can reach all the way to the bottom. It would just get exponentially less bright.
Do you enjoy saying something
drop
like
off,
that?
It wouldn't drop off to zero.
Do you like saying that? Do you like being smart, Luke?
No, I just mean that there's no such thing as like, it can't reach there because it would just get less and less bright. I mean, eventually, I suppose if one photon was left and then that one photon was like not able to get further, then, but that's not after 1,800 meters.
After 1,800 meters, it's dark. Really dark, okay? Because you can't see any sunlight.
It's dark. Scientific definition, it's really
it's
dark.
It's scientifically really freaking dark, okay? Elon Musk is a supervillain.
He's not a supervillain.
He's selling flamethrowers.
But for fun.
Okay.
He's like,
you might have a point.
He's like,
how is that not a supervillain activity?
No, you don't understand. He's selling it for fun.
Well, okay. Name me a supervillain that sold the weapons that it uses.
Syndrome.
I don't know who that is.
The Incredibles.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure. I don't remember that he did that, but I'm sure he did.
That was his plan.
Okay,
it was an easy to miss detail. Panther. It was only the whole plot.
Do you know what Pavlovian conditioning is?
No.
Do you know Pavlov?
No.
Do you know his dogs?
Pavlov's dogs. I've heard of that. I don't know what it is. Oh wait, no. Pavlov's dog is when you feed, like when the dog salivates or something. So, like, you give the dog food and it salivates, and then just the sight of the food makes it salivate or something like that.
It's what Sheldon did to Penny on the Big Bang Theory.
I remember now. You make, like, a sound and then give food, and then when you do the sound, then the dog salivates just at the sound because it expects food.
Yes, basically.
Hooray! I got there in the end.
There it is.
So, effectively, you take a potent stimulus, like food.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. And you pair it with a neutral stimulus, like a bell or any kind of noise or some other kind of visual thing.
Not too scary.
No. And the best known person that did that was obviously Pavlov, who did it with dogs. And like you said, he used dog food to get them to really like, you know,
salivate
and like the sound of the bell. And then just the sound of the bell itself made them salivate because they associated it with the food.
Okay.
They wanted to see if you could do that with a kid.
Right.
A human child.
When was this?
1920s.
God, that's way later than
earlier.
It's weird to me that they think that a dog and a child work differently. Like,
the dogs and children do work differently.
But they're just animals.
They work very differently.
They're actually the same thing.
But they would
Why would they get a lead?
People mad at me for taking my child out on a walk with this lead? Like,
they don't work at all.
Why is my child barking?
I don't know if you guys are the same, but my parents used to take me on a walk with a lead. I'm not joking. They used to put me on a little lead and take me for walks. Did they not do that to you?
Your parents did not do that to me. No.
is this the lukewarm child abuse?
This week we'll be talking about railway spikes and accidental brain surgery.
Phineas Gage.
Yeah. We teased him a little bit before, but now we're actually going to get into him, like that railway spike.
Have you been starting writing jokes in your notes there, Corey?
No, that just came to me.
Okay.
Much like the railway spike came to his brain.
Isn't it freaky that when you think about, say you think about a word like pineapple, and you think about it written down, the shape of the letters... The shape of the letters has nothing to do with the actual sound.
Mm.
It's only in our heads.
Yeah.
But I mean, I know that's obvious, but it's so inherent in our understanding of the shape of the word pineapple that it means the sound pineapple that we don't even realize that the actual thing there is just a bunch of squiggles.
Yeah.
We can't see it for what it actually is. We just hallucinate the meaning onto it straight away.
The longer you say it or the longer you read it, the more weird it becomes.
Yeah.
What I think is interesting is that in that entire time, you didn't actually mention pineapples, which the word and sound both represent. For no reason other than we agree that they do, which is it's like money. It doesn't really exist.
Yeah,
we're just all agreeing that that's candle. Yeah. That noise means this thing.
I guess similarly, the same thing is true in that you can't like try it right now if you're listening at home. Try and listen to me speaking right now and not hear the words I'm saying. Hear the sound I'm making without understanding the speech, and you cannot do it. And it's so frustrating. You can't listen to my voice
Have you seen a video called What English Sounds Like to...
Yes.
That's exactly what I'm imagining. It sounds like... Go look it up if you haven't seen it. It sounds like English, but you can't understand a word they're saying.
So the thing is that can actually happen to people with ADHD and information processing issues as well. Things can sound just like sounds rather than actual words.
Yeah.
So... It is, humans do have the capacity for that to happen, which is crazy.
Sure, but I just mean that in a
neurotypical context,
person, it's not, what I mean is it's not possible for you to turn off the functionality of understanding language. And that's so frustrating.
It's when it happens, it's really jarring as well. If you think something is English, but it isn't.
Mm.
Like I was watching Moana the other day and there is the entire film is sung in English apart from this one song. Where it's sung in some kind of Polynesian language, but it's like the cadence of the music makes it sound exactly like English.
Oh, weird. Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there like, what language is this?
I don't know what I'm singing, but
yeah.
It sounds good.
It is just sounds.
Yeah.
And then you lose it. P.S. If Corey researches / hosts and James edits them all, what does Luke do?
He drives here.
I diligently drive here every week and sit down.
He has a few thoughts and then he drives away.
Yeah, what do I do? I don't really know. You are free to replace me if you wish.
I don't know.
More utility.
You're reliable in an unreliable sort of way. Yeah, so interestingly, a lot of people have tried heroin.
I'm sure they have.
They?
Well, not exactly heroin.
Well,
morphine.
I'm shocked. A lot of them. Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, which
Wait,
is
what?
Legal heroin.
Really? And,
yeah, so morphine is the same.
I didn't know that.
It's very similar. It's basically the same drug as heroin, but it's also a lot stronger than street heroin.
Oh.
Because drug dealers don't want to give you pure stuff because that means they make less money. So they obviously cut it with a lot of different things. So anything you get from the doctors or in the hospital is going to be...
The good shit.
Ooh. It's pure.
Also, codeine, I believe, is metabolized into essentially morphine in the body. So, like, codeine is like, they're not giving you morphine, but the body just goes, thanks for
morphine,
the codeine. I'm going to make some morphine, which is basically heroin.
Thanks for this. I don't need it, but I'm going to do this.
You're going to turn into heroin.
You can give a man some heroin and he'll be high for a day, but teach a man's body to heroin and he'll be high for a week.
The rest of his life.
Teach a man's body to heroin.
I'm going to butcher this name. Professor Wallery Jaworskioff.
I think you can call him W. Scoff.
That was going to be my guess.
No,
shut up, James.
Sergei Brokonenko. Brokonenko. He's Russian.
I got that.
These names are hard, okay? An RMBK reactor, which stands for Reactor Bolshoi Moshchoshnost Kanalin.
I think you nailed that.
Yeah. Francis Galton, or Francis Galton? I'm going to say Francis Galton. Eugen Bloiler.
Good.
Bloiler.
Good,
Bloiler.
Good try there, Corey.
That's actually how you pronounce it. I speak a little bit of German.
Well, then it was a good try. It was a successful
Duolingo's
try.
Duolingo's coming
Eugen
handy.
Bloiler.
What it does is it makes a measurement, and then 50% of the time, it destroys that measurement. And when you do this, what you find is the times when the measurement was successfully measured, particles behaved as particles. And the time when the measurement was made but was destroyed because of the way that the experiment is set up, and destroyed is sort of a, as if you go and research it properly, what you actually find is that it's not destroyed the measurement, it is just produced in such a way that we can't be certain of where the particle, which slit the particle came through. This is all around certainty. If you make the measurement in such a way that you can be certain the particle went through that slit, then the particle did go through that slit. It's almost like your ability to know something makes that reality.
How do they make it uncertain? They just have them both light up at the same time.
So the way they do this, I will explain it a little bit because that's quite an easy question to answer. The way they do this is they create a set of entangled particles. Don't need to know what that is. Don't worry. And then they send these particles are directly connected to each other. And they send one of them to interact with the detector, go through the slits and interact with the detector the traditional way. And then they send the other one, which is entangled with that first particle, through a system where it goes through a set of mirrors that are only 50% reflective. So 50% of the time, it will go through to a detector where we know for certain which one it went to, and 50% of the time, it will go to one where we don't know. So, in effect, the measurement is destroyed. And what we find is, when we measure it and it can be recorded, then it behaves as a particle, and when we measure it and we can't be certain which slit it went through, it behaves as a wave. And the really key thing is, that's really bizarre about this, is that the particles hit the detector in the traditional way before they get to the thing that decides whether the data will be kept or destroyed. So the particle behaves as a particle or a wave before it's even been decided whether it's going to be a particle or a wave or that we will make the measurement. It's almost like it hits in any way it wants to, and then it goes through and we either make the measurement or don't, and then the other particle tells its twin particle, oh, the human knows we were measured, go back in time and behave in this way.
Go back in time from our point of view, when really from the particle's point of view, it's probably gone. It can take any path through time that it wants.
It can take, yes, exactly, but it has to match up to its twin. So at this point, the way I have read this experiment and the way that some theoretical physicists and quantum mechanic physicists have read this experiment is that you've eliminated that the particle is a light, sorry, that the light is a particle or a wave. You've eliminated that matter is even physical unless it's unobserved. You've eliminated that your interaction with the experiment is changing the experiment. And you've made sure that the fact that the data is recorded is what, or the fact that the data is conveyed to you, because it doesn't have to be recorded, it doesn't have to be saved to a hard drive, it just needs to be shown to you in such a way that, like, for example, if it goes through the right slit, then a light lights up.
Yeah.
It's not recorded anywhere physically other than in your brain and in your...
Yeah.
What that says to me and what that says to many people, and it is a very hotly debated topic, is that in the world of quantum mechanics, in our understanding of the universe from the quantum level, consciousness is part of reality and they are mutually dependent. Because if you have a physical system, it doesn't exist until it's observed by an observer. And if you have an observer, there's nothing for them to observe if there isn't physical reality. Okay, so I said at the start of this episode that I would give my theory of reality, which I'd like to put out there in case one day I'm proven to be right and I'm a genius in retrospect. So
strap in, kids. This is a big one.
So this is what I think is going on. There are no laws of reality. Nothing is fixed. When the universe spontaneously comes out of nothingness, because that's what science tells us it did, 13 billion years ago, it exploded Poof. Out of nothing, out of infinitely dense nothing. All things were possible and are possible because it came out of nothing. If it came out of nothing, it is nothing. And so all things are possible because nothing is there to make nothing not be able to do everything. And so
All possible things are laid out as waves of probability and of possibility across infinite space, and we are the observer choosing what to manifest into reality. So all things exist as possible states of waves of probability, and we observe things, we choose what to observe, and those things become reality. As well as that, I believe that science will never fundamentally understand reality, because these experiments prove that as soon as we try and measure reality, reality behaves differently to how it actually behaves all the rest of the time. And so we will never know the answers to the universe. We will get more and more complex prediction models, which is what science is. It's a bunch of prediction models, and it tries to infer why, but will never actually understand. And that is okay, right? I think that's okay. And at the end of the day, like, if we came out of nothing 13 billion years ago, and anything is possible if it came out of nothing, because it's just made of a load of nothing, and consciousness is the only thing that exists to bring it into reality, then why would you ever think that, like, anything is not possible?
If you want to be a scientist, it's not about seeking the truth or being the smartest person. It's about being someone that's able to admit that they are wrong about a great many number of things, and they will always be wrong until the day that they die about a great many number of things.
Yes.
And you can never know everything, and the goal of it isn't to know everything, it's to try and get a little bit better.
Yes.
Just tweak it a little bit and try and understand your experience a little bit more. Because you want everything, and you'll never
maintaining that you know nothing.
Yeah, you don't know anything. Look, I can guarantee you that maybe at least 80% of the things that you think are wrong.
Absolutely.
100%, oh, I'd go more than 80.
At least 80% of the things that you think right now, 100% wrong. You're wrong about it. Get over it.
Yes.
You're going to be wrong. That doesn't
Cry
matter.
Cry me a river.
Well, thank you for listening to my extremely chaotic episode of SciGuys.
You're wrong. See you next week.